translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. From that moment, when the Mayavadi sannyasis heard the explanation of the Vedanta Sutra from the Lord, their minds changed. And on the instructions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they too chanted, Krishna, Krishna, always. Purport. In this connection, it may be mentioned that sometimes the Sahajya class of devotees opine that Prakasananda Saraswati and Prabodhananda Saraswati are the same man. Prabodhananda Saraswati was a great Vaishnava devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but Prakasananda Saraswati, the head of the Mayavadi sannyasis in Benares, was a different person. Prabodhananda Saraswati belonged to the Ramanuja Sampradaya, whereas Prakasananda Saraswati belonged to the Sankaracharya Sampradaya. Prabodhananda Saraswati wrote a number of books, among which are Jai Sisi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Gornitai Sisi Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. Prabodhananda Saraswati wrote a number of books, among which are the Chaitanya Chandramita, Radha Rasa Sudha Nidhi, Sangeeta Madhava, Vrindavana Sataka, Navadweep Sataka. While traveling in southern India, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met Prabodhananda Saraswati, who had two brothers, Venkata Bhatt and Trimala Bhatt, who were Vaishnavas of the Ramanuja Sampradaya. Gopal Bhatt Goswami was a nephew of Prabodhananda Saraswati. From historical records, it is found that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu traveled in South India in the year 1433 Subkabda, which is 1511 AD, during the Chaturmasya period. And it was at that time that he met Prabodhananda, who belonged to the Ramanuja Sampradaya. How then could the same person meet him as a member of the Sankar Sampradaya in 1435 Sukhabda, 2 years later? It is to be concluded that the guests of the Sahajiya Sampradaya, that's Prabodhananda Saraswati and Prakasananda Saraswati, were the same man, is a mistaken idea. End of purport. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gena Jena Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobistam Stavditam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swam Padantikam Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimakti Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine, Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine, Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Pastyatya Desatarne, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimakti Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Iti Namine Sri Varshabhanabhi Devi Dayate Kribabdaye Krishna Sambandha Vijnanam Dayate Prabhave Namaho Madhur Ojwala Premadya Sri Rupa Nuga Bhakti Da Sri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigvahaya Namostute Namaste Gauravani Sri Murtaye Dinatarine Rupanuga Virurapa Siddhanta Dvanta Harine. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj Ki Jai. So this purport, Srila Prabhupada takes the liberty of wanting to clear up a major mistake or major deviation where two personalities, one a great Vaishnava, not only a great Vaishnava, truly great Vaishnava, Prabodhananda Saraswati, who was the brother of Trimala Bhatta and, of course, Venkata Bhatt. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed at the house of Venkata Bhatt for 4 months during the Chaturmasya season. in the year 1511. We had the good fortune. Maybe Maharaj was there at the time. Did you also come onto that yatra when we went to see Venkatabhat's house in the South Indian yatra about the year 2005, 2006? Then we also did it again in the year 2010 and 2011. But the house is still there, the same place where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu resided. And the family members are still in there. And there is one Murli Bhatt, who is a descendant of Venkata Bhatt, who is a very active and very prominent member of the Sri Sampradaya, who welcomed all the devotees from ISKCON, coming from Bombay, headed by His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. It was 5,000 of us there. And it was nice to be in that atmosphere. They treated us just like their own brothers, welcomed us very nicely, gave us all facility, and allowed us to speak within the Sri Rangam temple. And not only that, but actually gave special honor to His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. And the honor actually came from one acharya in the line of Ramanujacharya, who was the present acharya for the Sri Sampradaya. He came personally to meet Maharaj and to honor all the devotees. So it was and he also spoke that, I remember the speech a little bit. Of course, it was translated because he was speaking in Tamil. And he said that actually, you know, he said it in so many words that, you know, actually, we should chant Hare Krishna. Because they chant Om Namo Narayan, they glorify Narayan as their supreme worshipable deity. But he took the liberty in his speech to glorify the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and encouraged his followers also to chant Hare Krishna. So we thought that was really, really an amazing statement made by such a prominent person in the Sri Sampradaya. And we had an opportunity to see the house where Lord Chaitanya stayed. Of course, the house has changed quite a lot. It's not the same, you know, what we say, what was there then is changed a lot. It's been fortified and built up a little bit. But it's the same place. And it was very wonderful just to be there. And of course, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there, he met the three brothers, and Prabodhananda Saraswati was a great and prominent scholar of the Sri Sampradaya. And Lord Prabhupada mentions some of the books he wrote, and if you read his writings, they're really deep in bhakti, really, really deep, sometimes beyond our, what we say, the ordinary glorifications of the Lord. They go deep into the intricate moods of bhakti, especially in Radha Rasa Sudha Nidhi. That book is just a glorification of Srimati Radharani, verse after verse after verse, just glorifying Radharani and really expressing his own internal mood as an associate of Srimati Radharani and one of her, you know, groups, one of her followers like that. So when he glorifies the Lord, he doesn't really put much emphasis on any personality other than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, in some of his writings, it looks like it can be even a little offensive if you don't know his bhakti mood, because he somewhat downplays all the other incarnations of the Lord except for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He doesn't want to hear about anything but Mahaprabhu. He's just absorbed in the love and the glories of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that when you hear his glorification, you just think, wow, this is amazing. He has such deep love and affection for Mahaprabhu. So Prabhupada takes the time and takes a whole purport. He didn't say anything else in this purport. More than a half a page purport. Just to make the clarification, which is needed to separate a Mayavadi from a Vaishnava here. But here, the Mayavadis have become glorious because they surrendered. Whoever surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead also becomes glorious, no matter what their previous background was. And that glory is that now, after recognizing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Lord, they surrendered to his lotus feet, and it says here they always chanted Krishna, Krishna. They were always chanting the holy names of Krishna. It's interesting that I did a little research within the last year just to find out how many times, of course my research is not finished, but how many times Srila Prabhupada said in his lectures or in his books that we should chant 24 hours a day. Because, you know, you hear that we should chant 16 rounds, and that's, we should follow the principles, we should associate with Vaishnavas, we should, worship the deity, take Krishna prasadam. But in his statements, I found so many, at least a few dozen, of statements where Prabhupada said, and chant 24 hours a day. So when somebody says something more than once, you have to recognize it as being something not a simple statement. We were talking about this just last night and how Krishna consciousness really becomes complete when we have the desire to remember Krishna 24 hours a day. Then our bhakti will take off. Even if we're not complete in the perfection of remembering Krishna 24 hours a day, which is a high state of devotion, one should aspire for that platform. And one should practice that type of devotion that allows one to remember Krishna 24 hours a day, or that facilitates that. In other words, you shouldn't be doing anything that makes you forget about Krishna, or causes that kind of mentality to develop. One should facilitate their activities in remembering Krishna always. And that's the success of bhakti, because there's that one verse which is mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita in Madhya Lila, but it's actually a verse from the Mahabharata, where he explains that, we were talking this the other day, how there are 64 regulative principles. 44 are injunctions and 20 are restrictions. But combined together, they make up the entire process of bhakti. And how Krishna condensed those 64 into 15 in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto, he describes. He comprises it, he packs it in, he downsizes it into 15 major activities. But the essence is, always remember Krishna. And one who is always remembering Krishna, all the regulative principles are always automatically followed just by that remembrance of Krishna. But there's two injunctions. It's interesting. You would think, why would there be two? One is says, always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. So it's like, well, if I'm always remembering, then I'm never forgetting. But we forget a lot, so that becomes a prominent thing. So we have to remember not to forget. And we have to forget, not to remember Maya, that's for sure. And we have to remember to not to forget to remember Krishna. Is that okay? Something like that. So those two injunctions complete the whole process of bhakti. And the great acharyas appear in this world just to help us to come to that state of bhakti, to always remember Krishna. So in the year 1874, I believe. Is that correct? Yeah, I think it's 1874. On February 17th, at 3:30 p.m. in the afternoon, a personality descended into this world from the spiritual world. And that is the Guru Maharaj of Srila Prabhupada, or A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami's Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Vaishnav Thakur. Not an ordinary personality, but one who is actually came on the request of another great Vaishnava. And therefore Krishna fulfilled that desire and sent this great personality into the world. And that was Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prayers. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was struggling, somewhat alone, with very little support, to somehow or other bring Lord Chaitanya's movement back into the forefront within the area of Bengal of that time. Writing books, excavating or finding places of worship by the Lord, including his birthplace. Getting many, many, many insights and realizations, but seeing that there was no or very little support, very little Vaishnavas at the time. So he was thinking, someone, my dear Lord, someone from your personal entourage, someone who is qualified to take Lord Chaitanya's movement around the world, please send that personality. Because I'm getting old. I can't continue, and soon I will leave the world, so what will happen to the work we've started? And that prayer was answered, and this personality appeared who was given the name Bimala Prasad. There's a deity in the temple of Lord Jagannath called Bimala Devi, and before all the Prasadam of Jagannath is given to the public, it's offered to Bimala Devi after Jagannath gets it. And she takes, and then it's given to the general population or distributed in that way. So he was given that name, Bimala Prasad, by his parents, Bhagavati Devi, and his father, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. I believe he says he was the fifth child, I think, in the line. He had, there's two accounts of his, of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life. One says he had 10 children, and another one says he has 13 children. That book, Hindu, what is that book? Hinduism, Modernity? Huh? A Hindu's Encounter with Modernity. In there, it describes a little bit more detail of his life, that he had actually 13 children. So, there's always mysteries about great souls, and that's the nature of a great soul. They cause mystery in the lives of everyone. Because you can never figure them out, even in their practical life. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati descended, and he appeared, and he was born in a very, what we say, a way that babies are not usually come out, because they're connected to the mother from the umbilical cord, which connects the mother to the child, and that's how the child gets fed within the womb. But his umbilical cord was wrapped around his neck, in the same way that one wears a Brahmin thread. So this was noted at the time of his birth, and this was indicated that there's actually a great soul that has appeared in this, in the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But the real indication came when Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was a somewhat of a He was a magistrate, but he was also very much involved in the Jagannath temple at the time. In fact, he was asked to do the work in the Jagannath temple to help bring the standards back. The standards had somehow gone down within the worship of Jagannath. And so he came, and he organized and brought the standards back to a higher form of worship, punctuality, and everything else that was required. But at one time, during the Rath Yatra season, he wasn't there in Jagannath Puri. And the Rath carts were going down Grand Road, and they passed the house of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which is still there. You can go see it there. There's deities there. Devotees go. We have kirtan. We do puja. Puja's going on. And actually, it's an ashram. So the cart just happened to stop, Jagannath's cart, right in front of the house. At that time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wife, Bhagavati Devi, she took the little child, who was at that time 6 months old, wanting to get the blessings of Jagannath. And so she brought him to the cart, and she placed him right at the lotus feet of Lord Jagannath on the cart. Within a few moments, something very amazing happened. The huge garland that was around the neck of Jagannath. Now, Jagannath is huge. He's about 2 meters high and about a meter wide. That's Jagannath. He's huge. And so he dropped his big garland, and it went right around the child. And of course, everyone thought, wow, this is amazing. And his wife, she was so happy. And then when her husband, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, came home, she explained the whole situation. And then he said he could understand by his transcendental intelligence that this is the answer to my prayer. The personality who I've been praying for has appeared within my own family. And Prabhupada likes to glorify his spiritual master in different ways, but one thing he said, what he repeated quite often, is that when the little child, Bhima Prasad, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, was only 4 years old, it was customary to offer mangoes to the deity, the home deity at the time. And the mangoes were there. Now Bhaktisiddhanta, little Bhima Prasad, somehow or other, took and ate a mango before it was offered to the deity. Now, for a 4-year-old child. Now, his father, seeing that the child should be instructed properly, in a very mild way, not in a chastising way, instructed him that this is not right. First, everything must be offered to the deity first before you can eat. But after being instructed, he took it so seriously. A 4-year-old child, he took it so seriously that at that time, at the age of 4, he made a vow never to eat mangoes again in his life. Now, in Western countries, it might be an easy vow to follow. But in India, it's not so easy. Because there's mango season, and there's mangoes everywhere, and people offer you mangoes. And Prabhupada would also say that many times, Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. Many times, Prabhupada would say, people would come and offer my Guru Maharaj mangoes. This quite often. And he would say, oh no, I'm sorry. I am an offender, I cannot take. So he took it very seriously, very, very seriously. And we understand that the quality of this Vaishnava cannot be explained. Bhakti Vikash Maharaj has done a wonderful service to bring the life of Bhakti Siddhanta to everyone's, what we say, life in the form of these 3 volumes. Those 3 volumes took 22 years of research before he actually published it. And it's pretty amazing. If you haven't read it, please read it. And I would also make the humble suggestion. Today's a good day to start. It becomes more auspicious on this day if you begin. Get the special blessings of the Acharya. And there is so much about Bhaktisiddhanta's life that is fundamental to our practice of devotional service. And the main thing is that it was him that actually inspired worldwide Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada, when he was a young man, still very much a family. In fact, he was a family man. Just began his business in the pharmaceutical line. And, he had been married for 4 years. Prabhupada said, I got married in 1918. So my Prabhupada was 22 when he became married. He was born, and at the year 1922, he first met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And that's a very, memorable experience, even to all of us, how Prabhupada, our spiritual master, was encouraged by his friend Narendranath Mulick to come and see this holy person. And Prabhupada said, you know, I know all these holy people because his father used to host so many sadhus, so many saints, they would come. He would give them prasadam, he would give them a place to stay. And Prabhupada said, my father would even give them a hookah pipe. You know, and I remember Tamal Krishna Goswami said, Prabhupada, your father would give them hashish? Prabhupada said, yes, that was the custom. The holy man come, you give them a little hashish. You know, there was, nobody thought anything of it. So Prabhupada kind of dismissed it like, yeah, it's kind of natural. That's what they do. But Prabhupada, expressed later, he wasn't so impressed by such quality of Vaishnavas, holy men. Although many of them were mystical, very strong and tapasya. So he wasn't interested in the invitation to go see a holy man. But Narendranath Mother Prabhupada said, he dragged me. And then they went, and it was customary, they went to the roof of one building, which is still there. It's being honored now as one of the first places in the Hare Krishna movement. One Uta Danga Junction Road in Calcutta. And there's a rooftop. Bhaktisiddhanta was up on the top, and he was giving a lecture on Chaitanya Charitamrita. It was 7 o'clock in the evening. And Prabhupada came along with his friend, and he immediately... The custom is you pay obeisances to a holy person, and Prabhupada did. And while he was down offering obeisances, Bhaktisiddhanta noted this personality and said, actually, you are a very intelligent person. You should take Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement to the Western world. That's the first thing he said. Now, that would be pretty amazing when you meet someone for the first time and they give you a life mission. You never talked to them, you never saw them, and they're telling you this is how you should dedicate your life. First thing. Prabhupada said, I was shocked. I was shocked. But at the same time, I could understand that this person was very qualified. But I made my argument. But we are a dependent nation. Who will listen to our message? We need to have Swaraj. We need to get free from the British rule. Yes. Maybe that's not so good to say that in Britain, right? Maybe some of us are also trying to get free from the British rule. In a different way. But that's what that was the response. And he gave his argument. Prabhupada said, I was a Gandhian. And I was thinking this is the way to push our movement forward. But Bhaktisiddhanta spoke very simply, but very powerfully. And he said, this movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cannot wait. It's the need of the time. And actually, whether it's this political party is in office, or that political party is in office, nothing changes. So Lord Chaitanya's movement is the need of the time. And Prabhupada said, I was defeated. And you would hear Prabhupada many times, he would say, wherever I was always the leader, Prabhupada would say. I was always the leader, even amongst my friends. They always saw me as the leader. But now he was defeated. When you defeat a leader, that's pretty good. Prabhupada said, I was happy to be defeated. I was so happy to be defeated. And then later on, of course, as things evolved, and then Prabhupada was having the association of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's disciples in Allahabad, where he had his pharmacy. They came. Prabhupada would help them organize places to stay, and they would start doing programs, and then Prabhupada got connected like that. But the relationship between these two great souls is quite amazing. It's quite amazing. Prabhupada said, I never, hardly ever asked my spiritual master any questions, but I did ask him one question. How can I serve you? He said, this is a question I asked. I would always listen to his discourses, and he spoke in such high language that it was sometimes very difficult to understand what he was speaking. But still, I was fascinated and interested to listen. There's that famous story where they were on Parikram, and it was towards the end of the Parikram. They had been on Parikram for almost a month, and it was in Sri Vrindavan Dham. They had been going to all the holy places. So towards the end, it was an evening, and there was an announcement amongst the devotees that at 7 o'clock, the buses will be going to the Sheshashayi Vishnu Temple, and anyone who wants to go, please be there on time. But at the same time, Guru Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta, will be giving lecture in the tent. So Prabhupada was thinking, oh, you know, I'd like to hear. And so he went, and he listened. And Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta noted that about Prabhupada. Later on, when one of Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples, I think it was the two Krishna Brahmachari, wanted to recommend Prabhupada for initiation, he said, yes, I have already noted him. He likes to hear. He likes to hear. So we can learn from that how important it is, the process of hearing. Hearing is the essence of receiving knowledge. Seeing, you can get some, but you can also mistakenly get the wrong thing through visual knowledge. You may see something, but it's not what you actually see. Or may be reinterpreted in different ways. But hearing has a way to reach the heart, the soul. And when you hear transcendental knowledge, it awakens that love which is in the heart, especially when it's spoken by a pure devotee. So the process of hearing remains the foundation for our continuation in the success of Krishna consciousness. We want to hear more and more and more. And through hearing, we get realizations. Through hearing, we also get inspired to speak. We were talking about this last night, how hearing leads to, Shravanam leads to Kirtanam. And Kirtanam ultimately leads to the success of the process, which is Smaranam, to always remember Krishna. So as we hear more and more, we become full in the process of hearing. And then we want to speak what we hear. And then as speaking develops and becomes, what we say, purified, then smarnam becomes easy. It becomes easy through the process of kirtanam. Shravanam and kirtanam leads to smarnam. Smarnam is the goal, to remember Krishna, to remember the philosophy, to remember what's important in our devotional practice like that. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati would speak and Prabhupada would hear. Someone asked Prabhupada, this is interesting, our Prabhupada, he said, did you ever get chastised by your spiritual master? That's a pretty heavy question to ask your own spiritual master. Think about it. But Prabhupada said, Prabhupada took it really light. He said, you know, that was my happiest moment. And then somebody started to speak a little bit about the incident. Prabhupada took over and explained the whole thing. And he said, yes, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was speaking, and I was sitting, and then one man sitting next to me leaned over to me and started to speak to me while he was speaking, and I lent an ear to what he was saying. And then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati looked at me and said, oh, you think you know so much? Why don't you come up here and speak? Then I realized I was chastised. Prabhupada didn't do anything. All he did was listen to someone else who was speaking to him. He didn't even say a word. But Bhakti Siddhanta took the opportunity to chastise Prabhupada for listening. So you think about that sometimes. You look like we can become, somebody speaks to you at a time when you're not supposed to be speaking, and you go along with that, you're just as guilty. Like that. Just like during kirtan, sometimes devotees like to speak to each other, but it's an offense. When the Lord is being glorified in kirtan, conversations should not be going on. Unless it's an emergency and something has to be done right away and therefore there's no other, you know, recourse. But during worship, there should be no side discussions. That's mentioned in Madhurya Kandambini as one of the faults in the execution of bhakti like that. So, but anyway, Prabhupada said that was one of my happiest moments. I got chastised. There's another incident that's not mentioned anywhere but in the work of Bhakti Bakash Maharaj, where it was a gathering of many, many of the followers of Bhakti Siddhanta. Bhakti Siddhanta was speaking about how we should take this Krishna consciousness movement to the West. And our Prabhupada was sitting not directly in front, but more on the side. And Bhakti Siddhanta was encouraging his disciples to go to the West. And he said that actually one of you will do it. And then he looks right at Prabhupada when he says it and turns back and continues his speaking. That's narrated by Bhakti Vikash Maharaj in his book. So I thought that was really, really amazing. You know, this is the quality of Bhakti Siddhanta's. He understood, you know, how Lord Chaitanya's movement would actually go to the Western world. He could understand. And Prabhupada said, my god brothers were quite surprised because they thought, he's just a rotten grihasta, that's all. He doesn't even live in the temple. We're all sannyasis, right? They were thinking, you know, we're the advanced devotees. He's just a grihasta. He's got a family. He's got a business. But when they wanted to, you know, what was it? They wanted to make Prabhupada temple president in one place. And Bhakti Siddhanta said, no. He'll do everything in due course of time. So he understood the quality of Srila Prabhupada at that time. So the life of Bhakti Siddhanta is so rich with devotion. There are many beautiful stories. Although he was very strict, his humility was quite amazing. If someone would pay obeisances to him, he would always pay obeisances back. In fact, that would cause the disciples distress, because every time they paid obeisances to their spiritual master, he would pay it back. So they would make sure they would pay obeisances when he wasn't looking, so he wouldn't have to become inconvenienced in that way. That was his humility. He would always say, Dasosmi. Dasosmi. I am your servant. One time, one very important person came. This is an interesting story. It doesn't have much to do with Bhakti Siddhanta, but it does have something. And he came to see Bhakti Siddhanta. I think he was a politician, someone who had some government connections. But he liked devotional service, and he liked Bhakti Siddhanta. So he came, and he said, Maharaj, I'd like to ask you some questions. Bhakti Siddhanta said, well, actually, I'm really busy right now, but go see the pujaris. They'll answer all your questions. So he did. He went to the pujaris, and the pujaris were engaged in polishing all the brass and paraphernalia for the deity. So they were busy. So he said, you know, your Guru Maharaj has sent me. I have questions. They said, well, actually, help us with polishing this brass and doing all this deity worship, and then we'll answer your questions. So he sat down very obediently, did the service as directed. After some time, everything was finished. They said, okay, well, what is your questions? He said, thank you, I have no questions. He got up and started to walk out. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said to him, did the pujaris answer your questions? He said, yes, Maharaj, thank you. And he left. So some of you look bewildered. In other words, when you're engaged in devotional service, you get the answers to your questions. If you're absorbed in service, whatever questions you have will be revealed to you through the process of bhakti. One time someone asked Prabhupada a question. Prabhupada said, just go back to Godhead and all your questions will be answered. And another time he said, just chant Hare Krishna and you'll get all your answers. And that doesn't mean, I'm not advocating we shouldn't ask questions, because questions stimulate discussions, and discussions bring out many, many interesting points which would never come out without the questions and answers discussions. But the principle is that the deeper we go into our own bhakti, the more all our answers are revealed through the process of bhakti and through our own reading of Prabhupada's books like that. So it's all there. Should I speak more on Bhakti Siddhanta? There's so much more. I'm doing everything from memory right now, so, and my memory is not so good. Bhakti Siddhanta, in the year 1914, in June, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur left the planet. I think it was June 22nd, 1914. He disappeared from this world. And in Kartik, the following year, 1915, Gorkishore Das Babaji Maharaj, the spiritual master of Bhakti Siddhanta, disappeared. Bhakti Siddhanta was feeling very, very alone. And he was thinking, how can I go on carrying out the mission of spreading Lord Chaitanya's movement here when my two spiritual masters, his father and his Guru Maharaj, disappeared within the period of 15 months, both of them? He felt really alone. And so he was praying to the Lord for help, guidance. And then one night he had a dream. And the dream was more than a dream, it was like a vision. And in the vision, the whole Panchatattva appeared to him, along with Bhakti Vinod Thakur and Gaurkishore Das Babaji. And they said, "You preach, we are with you. You preach, and we are with you." Now, wow, that was an amazing dream. The whole Panchatattva says, "They're with you." And so he took heart from that dream, and that gave him great hope and confidence. And then from there, later on, not long after that, he took the sannyas order of life. He's criticized for taking the sannyas order of life the way he did, because he did it without a guru. But he put a picture of his own spiritual master, Gaurkishore Das Babaji, in front of him, and chanted the mantras for sannyas that were taught within the Sri Sampradaya, which he had learned, and he gave himself sannyas. Now that's pretty bold. But he felt there was no one on the planet who was qualified to give me sannyas. He couldn't find anyone or didn't see anyone that was qualified. So he took the liberty of doing it himself. And sometimes he's criticized for that. But I would say he's more than a sannyasi. Sannyasi is still within the Vanashram system. It's simply a material designation. It's an order of life. It's a way to practice bhakti. But he was more than a sannyasi. He was what we say, Paramahansa Vaishnava. He was free from any designation. He was a personality that his glories were extolled in so many wonderful ways. In 1911, I'll digress a little bit in time, in 1911, there was a big debate going on between the Brahmins and Bhaktivinoda Thakur and some of the Vaishnavas. And the debate was, the Brahmins were saying, if you're born in a Brahmin family, you're a Brahmin, the Brahmins are the best. And the Vaishnavas were saying, well, actually, you know, Brahmins are glorious, but actually, unless one becomes a Vaishnava, what is the use of just having a Brahminical title? Because you can't really save anybody. Yeah. So there was some differences of opinion. So in Midnapur, on September 9th, and there was supposed to be a three-day discussion between Bhaktivinoda Thakur and some of the leading Brahmins in the area. But just before that happened, Bhaktivinoda Thakur got so sick. He came down with rheumatic fever, and he was bedridden, unable to move. And it was time for the debate. And he was thinking, I have to find someone to go in my place. And at that time, his son, Bhaktisiddhanta, was doing some writing on this. And it later was published into a book called Brahmins and Vaishnavas. You've seen that book? So he wrote that just prior to that debate. And then he showed that manuscript to his father, and he said, this is wonderful. You're qualified. You go. And he went on that behalf of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And when he came, no one knew who he was. They were thinking, who is this person? Anyway, they sat and they listened. He spoke first. And the first part of his speech, he started to glorify the Brahminical order. He was glorifying the Brahmins. If you're born in a Brahmin family, it's the best of all births. It's glorious. There's nothing. He's quoted scriptural evidences saying the importance of, you know, having Brahminical qualifications. But then, you know, the Brahmins were feeling really enthusiastic. They were thinking, he's on our side. But at one point in his lecture, he changed course. And he said, well, but actually, unless you actually come to a Vaishnava, a Brahmin can't even save himself, what to speak about saving others. But those who take up devotional service and engage in, you know, under the guidance of a pure devotee of the Lord, they, even if they're born in a sutra family, and he quoted many verses, the verse by Narada Muni and others, that it's not by birth but by qualification. And then he made his point by quoting verse after verse after verse. And when the crowd was there, there was a lot of people there, hundreds of people, they were listening, they said, this person is amazing. He's speaking so powerfully, so convincingly, speaking Shastra so expertly. And he was so humble. And that, so they just, the Brahmins started feeling embarrassed, so they just got up and left. They couldn't stay there any longer. And the crowd just wanted to get the mercy of Bhaktisiddhanta, so they started to go to touch his feet. Now, the police were there. They were thinking, this is going to be a problem. Hundreds of people want to touch his feet at once. So they stopped the crowd, and what they did is they washed his feet with buckets of water, and then they threw it on the crowd. And everybody got special mercy. A rain shower of lotus dust like that. So, and then that somewhat established his reputation as a great preacher. And then later on, of course. So these are, his life is quite amazing. It's so full of, what we say, amazing statements. He was strong. I mean, some people read Bhaktisiddhanta and they shake. I mean, he's made statements like, if you haven't chanted 64 rounds a day, 1 lakh of names, you haven't come to the human form of life yet. Hare Krishna. So, I mean, he's really puts you, makes you feel like you haven't even begun in devotional life, no matter where you are. And that's good. That helps us to become humble. Helps us to understand our position, that we have a long way to go. And it's good to feel like that. So he was strong. In fact, he was so strong in his preaching that he threatened so many others who were so-called spiritualists, so much so that they wanted to kill him. They came to a police officer and said, my dear police officer, here is 25,000 rupees. Wow. In the year 1919, 25,000 rupees. How much is that? That's almost like, that's probably like about 25,000 pounds now. A rupee is not like it used to be. That was a lot of money. And they wanted to bribe this police officer. And he said to these persons, actually, we do such things. We do take such bribes. But I cannot do it for this saintly person. So he refused. And then he went to Bhaktisiddhanta. He said, please take care. There are men that are out to get you. I'm warning you. So many times, when he was on Parikram, you know, the whole Parikram was stoned by people from different areas because they were instigated by the Smarta Brahmins and others like that. And none of the temples in Vrindavan would give them shelter during that time, except one temple. Guess which one? Huh? Radharaman Temple, yeah. That was the only temple that gave them shelter, Sri Radharaman Temple. So Bhaktisiddhanta was speaking so strongly, and he was just upsetting everybody's status quo. He exposed everything that was pretentious, cheating, less than pure devotional service. And therefore, he shook a lot of people up. I think if he was here today, he would probably shake most of us up too. He is here in the form of Srila Prabhupada. But Prabhupada said, I'm much more lenient than my spiritual master. In fact, he said, we shouldn't really, you know, take instructions directly from Bhaktisiddhanta. You should get your instructions from me, because they're coming, you know, ultimately, according to time, place, and circumstance. But Bhaktisiddhanta is so amazing. I mean, his purity, his no-nonsense, his compassion, his humility, all good qualities. And we actually, you know, everyone gives Srila Prabhupada the credit for taking Krishna consciousness around the world, and that's true. But it was the inspiration and the desire of Bhaktisiddhanta to make it happen. It was him that was sending his devotees in different places. They went to what is now known as Myanmar, and it was Burma at the time. They went to Burma. They went to Germany. They went here to London. And many of them came back and had very little, what we say, practical results from their preaching. But with Prabhupada, our Prabhupada, he was determined. He wasn't dissuaded. He took Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's instructions, take Krishna consciousness to the Western world. Because sometimes, even great spiritualists, when they used to hear that statement that Lord Chaitanya's movement will be every town and village, it would be interpreted that every town and village in India, by some. But that wasn't the actual interpretation. The interpretation or the understanding that every town and village of the world, not just India. So that was clarified by Prabhupada's success in bringing Krishna consciousness to the world. And therefore we're grateful for that. So I'll tell one little nice story. There's one, his name was Bhagaji. He was serving Prabhupada in Vrindavan. And he liked Prabhupada. He was an elderly man, and he would cook for Prabhupada there. Prabhupada liked him a lot. And he would associate with Prabhupada. Prabhupada would talk to him. Now Bhagaji, one day it was really cold in Vrindavan, so Bhagaji wanted to cook something nice for Prabhupada for breakfast. So he just happened to have some wheat germ. I don't know if you know what wheat germ is. It's a kind of part of the wheat that's very nutritious. So he decided to make wheat germ halva for Prabhupada for breakfast. So he made it, and he was really happy. Prabhupada's going to really like this. It's going to be nice and tasty and warm. So he brought it in front of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada looked at it and said, what's this? Prabhupada said, oh, this is halva made from wheat germ. Prabhupada said, he wasn't interested. Bhagaji's heart just dropped. Oh, he was so devastated. He picked up the halva, walked out, went into the temple room, with a picture of Bhaktisiddhanta was sitting there, and he sat in front of the picture and started to pretty much express his unhappiness to Bhaktisiddhanta. And he said, oh, I tried to serve your disciple and I failed. I'm such a... And he was just criticizing himself, acting in a very humble way. But his heart was broken because Prabhupada refused the halva. Now Prabhupada heard him making these prayers to Bhaktisiddhanta, because he was really expressing it quite loud. And then Prabhupada said, Bhagaji, hey Bhagaji, bring the halva, bring the halva, bring the halva. And then he brought it and Prabhupada ate it all. And then Prabhupada said, the grandfather is more merciful than the father. And he said, you should also learn that too. So in your relationship with your spiritual master, your param guru is always more merciful. So for us who are direct disciples of Prabhupada, our param guru is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And for those who are disciples of Prabhupada's disciples, then Prabhupada is your param guru. But he's also the founder acharya, so it's a little different. But still, you get more mercy from Prabhupada than you would from your spiritual master. It's like that. Because Prabhupada is an ocean of mercy. Unlimited ocean. So that's very nice. That's a beautiful story. That's one of my favorite pastimes. Okay, so should we, what is our time frame, Shruti? Should we end now? Okay, yeah. Yeah, okay, so today is also a fast day. It's not so hard. You can do it. In fact, when you do it, you actually feel like, I should do this more often. Okay, so we fast in honor of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's disappearance day, which is a glorious day. The appearance and disappearance of great souls are like, they don't disappear, they simply go to another place and do the same thing. Although they may disappear from this realm, they're doing the same thing somewhere else, spreading Krishna consciousness in a glorious way. So as the sun appears and disappears over the horizon, the appearance and disappearance of great souls is analogous to the sun's rising and setting, because the sun doesn't rise and set, nor does it disappear and appear. It's always in its orbit somewhere. But from our vision, it appears like that. So, great souls, he who reasons ill, that say that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still and sound, Vaishnavas died to live, and in living spread the holy name around. This was written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur on the Samadhi Mandir of Srila Haridas Thakur. And that one who thinks that Vaishnavas actually die, they don't die. They live within sound. They live within their sound vibration. So when we take shelter of their sound vibration, we also can live with them and associate with them. They make themselves available through their vakya, like that. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj ki jai. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj tiro bhava ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Hariya. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.